Cause all the bad days come for good reasons. Hey,
you could get high or you could get low. You could stay young or you could grow.
2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he joins us every Monday afternoon, Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers and sports director at Minnesota News Network, of course, talking Gophers with us this afternoon. Mike, as always, thank you for the time. Minnesota won big in Corvallis, 48-14 over Oregon State on Saturday night. Even though P.J. Fleck didn't fully commit to it afterwards, I don't think Demery Croft lost the job. Connor Rhoda may have just taken it from him. Is that what you saw as well?
Well, I think there's now some separation based on performance and based on results that the coaching staff can use. I don't know. We may find out yet today. I would think certainly tomorrow between the coaches' show and the weekly press conference, which happens on Tuesday, both of those, that we'll get a little more clarity on it. You're right, he wouldn't commit afterwards. My hunch, this is just a guess, I really don't know which way it'll go, is I think they'll still both play this weekend, but I do think separation is the word I'd use, that based on results on the field, that Connor Rhoda has separated himself a little bit. Maybe he'll get a few more reps in practice, maybe he'll get more reps in the game. And I think the timing of it works because, remember, after this week's game, there's a bye week, and then you start the Big Ten season. And I got a sense that this past week, more than the previous weeks, that Fleck was getting a little antsy about it, like he'd like to have a starter in place. So I think one more week and let both guys see what they've got, and then I think he's probably going to make a choice. But, again, all that could be way off. We'll find out as the week moves on this week. I'm sure at some point we'll get some more clarity on it.
And it was odd, too, because Connor Rhoda, well, Minnesota as a team only attempted 8 passes the entire game against Oregon State, and Rhoda attempted every single one of them, going 7-for-8. To me, it was the Gophers not needing to pass. It wasn't that they didn't trust their air attack. It's just the running game was so solid, and it was working throughout the game. Why open up everything? There was no point to do that, was there?
Yeah, no, I agree, and that hasn't been new. I mean, the previous staff, both with Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill, have done that before. I remember San Jose State a couple of years ago. I think the Gophers threw like 5 passes the entire game and rolled in that game. So that and even the Maryland game last year that Connor Rhoda started, I think they only threw, 10 or 12 passes, if that. I don't know the exact numbers. So that's not necessarily a new strategy. I do think clearly they're going to have to at some point, if they're going to win Big Ten games, have to throw the football more. Croft did attempt a pass, but there was a pass interference call on that play, so it didn't count. And Rhoda attempted a pass where there was a pass interference, and then another 2 or 3 passes where he got flushed from the pocket and scrambled. So they called more than 8 pass plays, but man, I don't think it could have been more than 12. And that's a big number. They ran the ball 58 times, and so the ratio is definitely run heavy. And when you're winning and you're piling up, I mean, I think they ran 15. They ran the ball 15 straight times at one point in the fourth quarter just to bleed the clock, and Oregon State could not stop them. So that's a good sign. Given, I thought the offensive line didn't play great against Buffalo. I thought they played better, but I still think there's room to improve. But I think it's a good sign that they were able to run the ball so effectively.
Did it appear to you that Connor Rhoda had like a little extra juice, a little extra confidence from the get-go, not even after the long touchdown pass? He had another one of those bad boys to Tyler Johnson, but even before that, from the start, it felt like in week one, both of these guys were kind of tight, and even though Rhoda only threw 8 times against Oregon State, he just seemed more free and more willing to just sling it when he could and direct the offense.
I think so, and I think that Rhoda talked about it in our post-game interview on the radio show, that he and Fleck, and I think Croft was in on the conversation as well, that P.J. Fleck is really looking for a guy who's going to be in command, be in control, that they use the word game manager, and when you hear people say that, usually that gives you the tenor or the tone that, oh, he's not a great quarterback, he just has to go through and make sure he doesn't make mistakes. And I think the Gophers, I don't know what they believe, but I think they believe that they have more than a game manager in either of those guys. I think they're better than that. But I also think that Fleck's big thing is he wants to see them be game commanders, if that makes sense. Like be in control. Tell a receiver, hey, that's not the route you run, or hey, you got to line up here, or hey, offensive line, you got to protect me, and have the command. And I think Rhoda, I've thought this from the start, Rhoda is a step ahead in that. I think in just in that part of it. One, he's been around a little longer. linebacker. He's a senior, and I don't care what you say, whether you have experience or not. When you're a fifth-year senior, it's easier to look a sophomore receiver in the eye and tell him, hey, you need to do this or this, than when you're a sophomore receiver looking at one of your classmates, and neither of you have played very much, to tell him that. So he had, a built-in advantage from that, and I do think he still has the advantage there. I think Croft brings some other things maybe that he does better. We saw it with the run, the 64-yard run late. I don't think Rota can do that, but that doesn't mean Rota shouldn't play or shouldn't start, because Rota has the other stuff that goes, and that's why I think it's been partly why it's been a hard decision is to come to one guy, because they do each have some really strong suits, and which kind of complements the other. You know, that they're not, that the strong suits aren't necessarily the same for both guys, so it's kind of a unique blend and a unique situation. But I think there has been separation now. I think Rota has taken a little step, and for Rota's sake, it's the right time to do that, because I do have a feeling that Fleck is ready to pull the trigger here, if not this week, certainly when this week is done.
He is the voice of the Gophers. He is the sports director at Minnesota News Network. Mike Grimm with us this afternoon here on the Blitz. It's funny, you just brought up the next point I was going to feed into. I'm watching and thinking in garbage time, Mike. Man, Demaryius Croft could really make this something of a dilemma again if he rips off one big play, and lo and behold, he has the 64-yard touchdown run. And you mentioned it. That is something that he offers that is much stronger than Connor Rota. I think Rota had six carries or six rushes for 14 yards. Week one against Buffalo on those read options, I mean, Connor Rota didn't even pose a threat to pull it, duck, and run himself. He was a little more willing, I think, this week around, but still that's something that Croft certainly has in his back pocket as an advantage.
Well, he's faster. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's one of the faster players on the team, period, regardless of position. So that is an innate advantage, right? I mean, now speed, and that'd be great if it were a 40-yard dash, but speed is just one small facet of what makes a really good quarterback. I love the way Demery throws the football. I mean, just from a throwing standpoint, as Ron Gardenhire used to say, the ball comes out of his hand beautifully. I mean, it just does. It's one of the prettier passes you'll see. I've talked about that before. But there are other things that you also have to do, and he's still learning some of those things. But that run, now if the play fake is carried out the same way, you know, I suppose Rota, you know, Rota might get 40 yards on that play. I doubt he goes to the house. But, that's how much Oregon State bid on the fake. The thing I'll say about Rota as well, in terms of Demery has more speed, the flip to that is, and I started noticing this in camp a little bit, because I'll be honest, when we watched him last year against Maryland and then just in practice a little bit, I had pigeonholed Rota as more of a statue, you know, more like a Tom Brady. I'm not saying he's clearly not as good as Tom Brady, but a guy that he's not going to run for much. If there's pressure, it's probably a sack. I don't think that anymore. I think he is more nifty and more mobile than I thought, and we saw that Saturday. I mean, there were a couple times where he probably should have been sacked, and he was able to avoid the rush. I think one time he got back to the line of scrimmage, one time he threw it away, I think another time he tried to throw it away and fumbled, and luckily that ball went out of bounds. But there were some plays where he did show some nimbleness, more quickness, and a little better runner mobility-wise than I think I thought he was after watching him last year. So that is good, and I think that shrinks the gap between him and Croft, because Croft is clearly nimble and fast and can run and avoid the pass rush. But I think Rota is better than I thought he was at that, and he showed that a lot, I thought, on Saturday. They haven't given up a sack yet, by the way, Mitch, the Gophers, one of just, I think, eight teams. Now, they've only thrown the ball like 30 times in two games, so there hasn't been a lot of opportunities to get sacked. But, for all the heat, and I wasn't real thrilled with how the offensive line played in week one, and there were still some areas where they weren't great in week two. But, you know, let's face it, there's two new starters. There's a guy starting at a new position. And it takes a while for that group of five to get stuff done and to get gelled. And it's not going to happen overnight. And I thought there was a good step forward. But if we want to talk about, hey, they struggled in the run game against Buffalo, we also probably should tip our cap a little bit to the idea that they haven't given up a sack now through 2 weeks.
Always coming prepared. I did not know that about them not giving up a sack through 2 weeks. We talked about the successes in the running game Saturday night. I don't know what more can be said about Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks that already hasn't. Rodney had 92 yards and a touchdown. Shannon had 91 and three scores. I'm starting to run low on descriptions for these two running backs.
Well, I thought that they played just okay by their standards against Buffalo, and that's not a knock on them. It was just one of those nights. It was a weird night. You know, they did what they had to do, but I thought they played truly inspired football the other night. Like they, impose their will on Oregon State. And you could see Oregon State wilting in that third quarter, just literally losing, well, not literally, but figuratively losing their will. You know, they just were getting beat down. Some of that has to do with the offensive line. I think a lot of it had to do with the way Smith and Brooks were running. They were lowering shoulders. They were getting extra yards. They got two or three first downs they had no business getting. I mean, and it wasn't an offensive line situation. It was a total that, hey, the running backs are in trouble, but this running back's going to get a first down. I mean, there were two runs I can think of in particular. Smith had, a third and three or a third and four where they handed it off in the fourth quarter. He got hit a yard deep in the backfield. There was no blocking, no hole. He broke that tackle, spun around, and then kind of weaved his way methodically through or in between three people who had their arms on him, and he just got enough for the first. And that, I thought that was really the prime example of what those guys are all about. And they played really inspired. I was impressed with them. And if they get that effort, and they should, I mean, those guys are good kids, high-quality kids, and they've shown that that's how they play football. This running game should be in really good shape for the season.
Always enjoy his time with us. Mike Grimm, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz. I know on the television broadcast, a couple of times they cut away to Jonathan Celestine's mother, who was in the crowd, and he balled out. He had 10 tackles, 8 solo, a TFL. He recovered a fumble. I don't know if he felt the extra spark with mom in attendance, but defensively, I mean, it started with him. He had himself a game.
He was unbelievable. In fact, early he missed a blitz and then missed a tackle. And I remember Daryl during the commercial and I were talking, and he's like, yeah, Celestine has to, you know, those are plays he has to make. And from that point on, he was incredible. The one play he made showed up on a bunch of highlights where he, in essence, beat the ball carrier to the handoff and sacked. And then he got a fumble recovery, as you mentioned, and, you know, a tackle for a loss, all kinds of stuff. He was definitely making his presence felt. He is certainly going to get an opportunity to play at the next level somewhere, whether he's drafted or free. I don't know where all the rankings are, but he has now put himself into a position that he can probably play this game for a living, you know, starting next year. Obviously, there's a lot of time yet this year for good things to happen, and hopefully he continues to do what he's done. And the story is a sad one. His dad down in Georgia this summer was out jogging and was hit by a car and killed. And so, you know, he plays with a heavy heart sometimes, and he, you know, he thinks about his dad, and his mom being there, I'm sure, was a motivation and an inspiration for him.
Yeah, and he was the leader on the field Saturday night. I don't want to sound like a jerk here, but how like, underwhelming, how vanilla did that Oregon State offense look to you? Like, tip your cap to the Gophers defense. They were really good, but Oregon State's offense outside of the second quarter, they didn't really pose a threat.
Nothing. Yeah, that's not a very good. I think even a week ago when I was on with you, I was talking about all summer long. I was telling people this game's going to be harder than people think. It's not just a slam dunk. You're not going to go out there. And I felt vindicated in that theory because people were rolling their eyes at me when the point spread came out and the Gophers were an underdog. I'm like, see, that's what I've been trying to tell people. This game is not going to be a rollover. And then after the first quarter and a half watching Oregon State, I thought, you know, Minnesota should win this game about 40-10. Oregon State's terrible. So I felt less vindicated after watching them play, and I don't know what the odds makers were thinking. You know, Minnesota controlled it. Oregon State is, you know, the Pac-12 is really good. They're going to struggle. I don't know what the future holds there, but that team is not very good. And quite honestly, I thought they were, well, I don't want to call them dirty, but they played on the edge of scrappy, and there were some things going on that I don't think every Gopher really liked. And yeah, that's an interesting situation that's going on there. I got to believe Gary Anderson, the head coach, that was his head-scratching move when he made it, leaving Wisconsin, which was, what, a play or two away last year from being in the playoffs. Leaving that program 2 years ago or 3 years ago now and taking over that Oregon State program, and boy, they're trying to rebuild it. It's that team's not very good. They have Washington State, Washington, USC, Colorado, and Stanford in the next five of the next 6 weeks. They do have a bye week in there. And then later in the year they play Oregon, who's been scoring like a million points. So I'm not sure where the wins will come for that team, quite honestly. You know, they're sitting at 1-2, and in that Pac-12, it's not going to be easy for them. So I know that's a longer answer than you probably wanted, but you're right. The answer is they weren't very good. They were not very good.
And, yeah, the schedule as it forecasts lying ahead for them was something I brought up to you last week, in that their next 5 weeks, they could be facing four ranked teams and Colorado, who certainly is no slouch in their own right, and that the Minnesota game was the best chance for Oregon State to try to pick up a win in the next couple of months, it would appear. What caught your attention the most in the game? Like, what was your number one takeaway?
Well, let's see. I just like the response that Minnesota had. They jumped out to the lead. I don't know if they relaxed a little bit. There was some funky play there, that weird fake field goal, it wasn't a punt. I know I watched the TV replay yesterday. They called it a fake punt. Well, they were at the 27-yard line. They weren't punting. The field goal unit was on, but the punter was the holder, and he was the guy that got the snap, and it wasn't in the field goal set. I mean, they sent the field goal team on, and then they got weird play. So that got them 7 points, and their only other touchdown came after Croft muffed the shotgun snap. So they really, you're right, had nothing going. The quarterback was just all right. But my point is, and your question was, what impressed you? After it got to be 17-0, maybe they relaxed a bit. There were some funky plays in there. And then they fumbled the snap. And now it's 17-14. And I will say the crowd's into it now, right? At that point, they're into it. They're starting to believe. And, a team on the road with all the different things that they went through, which I'll tell you about if you got a minute, with all the travel stuff, which was worse than I thought. They responded. They came down and made a nice drive and got a field goal, and then they just came out and blitzed them in the second half. I mean, they basically scored every possession they had. I think they punted on the first possession and then scored pretty much every time after that. So I thought the response was good. And the other thing, just flat out going and whipping somebody can be healthy for you, just to build confidence. And they haven't had one of those in a while. Like, even all the wins last year, they had 9 wins last year, and they were all, even Purdue and Rutgers, teams that struggled, Minnesota, struggled with. And it was, all meat grinder kind of wins. And so sometimes it's good just to go out and hammer somebody, and that's what they did.
We always have all the time in the world. Did you say there were travel issues getting to Oregon State or Corvallis?
Well, nothing unexpected. And if for those that listen to the coaches' show or the news conference or anything, P.J. Fleck was setting the stage about how difficult it was. So, I'm not a big believer. Look, they're flying charter. They don't have to go through, what normal people have to go through on these flights in terms of, it's a pretty simple security process at the facility. They jump on the bus. They drive them right out to the tarmac. They jump on the Sun Country flight, and away you go. You land, you get on the bus, you go to the hotel. That's normal. But in this case, you're flying 3.5 hours. That's not a normal trip. That's a long trip. Most of the Big Tens are around an hour or so. You fly to Iowa City, and it's 35 minutes, and, Nebraska's 50 minutes, and so on. But 3.5 hours going to a different time zone, it's a 9 o'clock kick. And Fleck was talking about all the issues, and even I was like, come on, it's a charter flight. These guys are going to be okay. They normally fly in, teams that play Oregon State fly into Eugene, Oregon, which is where the University of Oregon is, and about 40 miles from Corvallis. There is no airport in Corvallis, but the Eugene airport was having runway construction. They're redoing some runways, and so their long runway is no longer available, or it is, but it shrunk. And so the big weighted down plane that we fly with all the football gear and, all these offensive linemen and every seat on the flight is full, it's as chock full as you can get. There isn't enough runway to stop the plane, right? So you can't fly into that. So we had to fly into Portland, Oregon, which is 2 hours from Corvallis. And again, this is all, this is real world problems, right? I mean, but that said, you are trying to win a football game and everything's a factor. So I'm trying not to, nobody died. There's no tragedy here, but there was some stuff that they had to overcome. So they land in Portland. Now it's a 2 hour time difference. And then you have to bus. So you bust 90 minutes to Salem, Oregon, which was the closest place they could get enough hotel rooms for an entire team. That's where teams usually stay. That's still 40 miles from Corvallis, so you spend the night there. Then you get on the bus, and you bus another. It's 40 miles, but it's about an hour drive time. It's beautiful country out there, by the way, all the timber and the foothills and the mountains. And you drive through that, and you get there, so it's an hour trip there. And then they win the game, which is nice. And then after the game, it's 12:30 Minnesota time. You get all the equipment loaded back up. You get the guys loaded back up. And then it's a 2 hour bus ride. Then you go through security. You board the plane. The plane took off at 4:30 Sunday morning. No sleep, right? I mean, this is the game's done at 12:30. It's a 2 hour bus ride. It's an hour to an hour and a half to get through security and everything else. And then the plane lands at 7:30. You're back on campus at about 8 or 8:15, and away you go. So it was not a joy trip, that's for sure. And like I said, it's wonderful country. But my guess is if Oregon State calls the Gophers and says, hey, do you want to re-up and go home and home, my guess is P.J. Fleck will say, hey, we loved your city. I might come on vacation with my family sometime, but no way, and you know what, are we going to schedule a home and home with you guys again? So that's just my thought. It really was a fun trip, but there was a lot of travel stuff going on there.
Yeah, sounds chaotic. We'll finish up with a couple of quick points. Mike Grimm with us this afternoon. Middle Tennessee State next up on the schedule this weekend. 2:30 kickoff at TCF Bank Stadium. The Gophers opened at 9.5-point favorites. This isn't a cakewalk. If we take away location, Mike, like the Gophers you just mentioned had to go all the way out to Corvallis on the West Coast, and now they get to host Middle Tennessee State. If you take away the location of those two games and just look at MTSU and look at Oregon State, I might be willing to stick my neck out and say Middle Tennessee State might be a better team. They lost to Vanderbilt in their opener, but they just won on the road against Syracuse on Saturday.
Yeah, and they've had big wins over programs before. I think they beat Missouri last year. They might have even had two wins over Power 5 teams a year ago. And they're a program that is in that next category down. They're higher than a mid-major, I would say. In football vernacular, they don't really use those terms. It's, you know, what is it, the Power 5 and then the Group of 5, and they're in that Group of 5. And I think they're one of the better ones in that Group of 5. And in basketball, it's the same way. And I know basketball has really nothing to do with football, but remember, this is the same program that beat the Gophers in the NCAA tournament, Middle Tennessee, that was like 27-3 or whatever they were a year ago. The reason I bring it up is it's a comparative note more than you know, a direct correlation, but the Gophers are in, you know, a Power 6 league in basketball, and then that next category, the high mid-major, so to speak, Middle Tennessee really fancies itself, and they should, as they showed last year, as kind of that next step really good team. They do the same in football. Like I said, they beat Missouri. They beat Syracuse. This weekend they beat Syracuse. They didn't play well and gave Vanderbilt all they wanted in the opener. So they fancy themselves that they can, you know, come into a Big Ten place and win. And they have been on this field before, this coaching staff. This has been kind of an ongoing back and forth. The Gophers actually played down there, I want to say, in 2007 or 2008. And that was a nip-and-tuck game. The game up here was a nip-and-tuck game when Jerry Kill was the coach. So this will not be an easy one. Minnesota, as you mentioned, is nearly a 10-point favorite. So if they play their game, they should win. But again, I'll caution people, it certainly is not just a, hey, if we show up, we should win this football game.
Kickoff at 2:30 p.m. pregame at 1:30 on Saturday afternoon. We always enjoy his time. Mike, as always, thank you.
You got it. Thank you, Mitch. Enjoyed it.
We'll wrap things up with some Twins sound next right here on the Blitz.